This is the state of things. I'm Phoebe Judge. Stand-up comedian Eric Trundy says that comedy saved his life, and he means it in the most literal sense of the phrase. His childhood was filled with trauma, and after years of repressing traumatic memories and struggling with suicidal thoughts and PTSD, he decided that he couldn't avoid the psychological pain anymore. So he quit his full-time job and headed into the comedy club. It was there that he was finally able to find some peace. On stage, he felt sane and never felt lonely. He now has regular gigs at comedy clubs throughout Greensboro. He'll be performing a benefit show this Saturday night at King's in Raleigh. But first, he joins me in the studio. Eric Trundy, welcome to The State of Things.
Thanks for having me, Phoebe.
So take us back to your childhood. You say that some of your earliest memories are all around comedy. What struck you about comedy back then?
The good memories. There were things that I heard when I heard people admit that life wasn't great. It was nice to hear, you know, and that they were making it funny. They made me laugh about it. And then the opposite to that was guys who were just completely silly as an adult, because I never saw that. Every adult I knew was overly serious and going through a lot of rough stuff. And so when I saw Steve Martin put an arrow through his head and never address it, it was just I fell in love.
You grew up in New Bedford, Massachusetts, if we couldn't tell from your accent already, in a not great neighborhood, in a town which has always been known to be a little bit rough.
Sure.
Tell me a bit about what life was like growing up.
We were lower class, poor, and it's just a violent place. I don't have a lot of memories that don't end with me getting beat up, you know, and it just, as I got older, I saw it and I realized I was one of those people who was just, I was inside of it, so I couldn't recognize it. Then I had kids and I noticed it because I didn't want them. I didn't want them to have the feelings I was having. You know, I was stuck and everybody was stuck, and some of us got out of there it's one of the best decisions I ever made, leaving, to be perfectly honest. And I can go back now, finally. For years, I'd go back, and it was torture. I think now, you know, I'm almost 40, and I finally realize that it can't hurt me, you know.
You were abused inside and outside the home. Would you mind telling us a bit more about that and how it impacted your mental health later in your life?
Yeah, absolutely. My parents, while they were together, it was just tumultuous. You know, it was the stereotypical bad relationship that they were in, and it got taken out on us a lot. And so there was that. And then, you know, it was, everybody I knew growing up, and I was, I grew up in the projects, so I was the only white kid, and I thought my name was White Meat for about 8 years. I really started to, respond to that. And then there was a lot of sexual abuse. I was sexually abused by three different people. So two men, one of the men was married, and they together did that. So I repressed all these memories for years, and I started having kids very young. I had my first son when I was 17 years old, and I didn't realize. So these flashes would happen, and then you stuff them down, and you know, to survive, you know, because it's a painful thought, and your brain wants to get rid of it, and it's protecting me. So once I started dealing with those and confronted them, didn't have a lot of time to deal with that, because you know, when you're raising kids, they're the priority. Once I started, you know, once I quit the job and started really diving into it on stage, is when I'm reliving. So I dealt with it enough to survive, and now bringing it back up intentionally is kind of counterintuitive, but it's been working for me, because I don't think there's a lot of benefit for me mentally to talk about it, but there's been benefit other people. I've made some really incredible relationships over the last 2 or 3 years by talking about it on stage.
So you're you're realizing that you're having these flashbacks that obviously what happened previously in your life, how could it not, is impacting you now. But you're in North Carolina working at a steady job. You quit the job. Mm-hmm. And then you go to a comedy club.
Yeah. Well,
what was that first night like at the comedy club?
Well, I had the job and I was married and I started doing comedy while I was still at the job. And I would go and I'd go to work super early. I was making a lot of money, and I make about 5% of that now. I was making a lot of money, and I was happy, and well, pretending to be happy. And I couldn't pretend anymore. I went to a comedy club because I found out there was some local. I always just thought comedy was reserved for very special people.
For Steve Martin.
Yeah, for Steve Martin and Richard Pryor and the greats, you know. And then I went to a couple of open mics, and I saw that it wasn't above me. It was attainable. At least that level was attainable. And so I started going, and I fell in love. I've never loved anything more.
And did it, when you first started getting up there, did you have trepidation about speaking about your mental health issues? I mean, did you, I can't do this. I have to be funny all the time. I can't be dark. And did you slowly evolve into, no, maybe I can use myself as the subject here of my material?
Well, I always made myself the subject of the material. I think that, I think anything else, people have better opinions than I do. Anything that anyone wants to talk about has already been talked about by geniuses. And the only thing I have to offer is my unique perspective. And so I started taking swings at these very low-hanging fruit jokes. And my first year was very bad. And what I realized is the only thing I had to do was just stay. And I'll learn. And so it took me a while to learn that I could talk very honestly and tell stories that were personal and talk about my mental health on stage. But when I did, I don't know what the crowd thought, but I felt good.
Well, we have a clip of you, of how you integrate some of your of your struggles into your comedy, and let's hear it.
I was molested as a kid. Thanks for that laugh. We're going to laugh. But a lot of people are like, Eric, you can't talk about being molested at a comedy show. And I say, what you can't do is molest kids, stupid. So we're going to talk about it. We got to. It's okay.
That's a clip of comedian Eric Trundy. He's performing a mental health benefit show this Saturday night at King's in Raleigh at 8 p.m. I mean, you're absolutely right. When you're watching your comedy routine and you're talking about jokes about being a fat guy, and then it switches to something so serious, you as a watcher, viewer, don't know what to do. You don't know what to laugh or what is happening.
Yeah.
It must be a very artful thing to use yourself in very serious topics like that.
I'm learning that. There are tricks. So that clip you just heard, Stand Alone, is not incredibly funny. And what I get, it actually happened last night. I turned off a very important person, but I couldn't not say it. And what I know is that when I say that, I get two reactions. I get a huge laugh, or I get people who pull back in their seats. And I love the people who pull back in their seats because I'll get them to laugh in about 10 seconds. And that laugh to me is so much better than the laugh they gave to me free. You know, I'd much rather earn it, make them laugh at something they don't want to laugh about, because I know those people are going to think about it later on. And it, you know, it's not about the experience is what I'm learning. It's not, we don't all have the same shared experiences. Not a lot of people went through the same thing I went through. Some people did. But we all have feelings, and I have feelings about that. And so I can make those feelings relatable. If that makes me sad, or that makes me anxious, or it makes me feel vulnerable, you felt all those things. You've just felt them about different things. So I can get you to relate to how I feel about it, and I really enjoy that.
You said that you often have people come up to you after shows. Tell me about that experience. Have there been any particular people that stand out?
So many. I get choked up thinking about it. I've earned this family of people who I've had people come up. I had this one guy. He came up and he asked me. He said, did that really happen to you? And I said, it absolutely did. He admitted to me that it had happened to him too. and he had never told another person. Him and his wife were going through on the cusp of divorce, and he told me he was going to go home and tell her that night, and he did. And that was 2 years ago, and they're happy. You know, they're helping each other. They're getting through it. It's one of the most important things to me is the conversations I have after the shows. They really keep me going.
So it's like this risk that you take saying it, just putting it all out there. It pays off maybe for the people that you want it to pay off for the most.
My audience is small, you know. I try to broaden it, and I think I can make most everybody laugh in ways. But the control is kind of out of my hands at this point. I sometimes say it when I shouldn't say it, but I just can't help but to say it because I have to. And the fact that it helps people is amazing. But in some ways, it's very selfish because it's a unique thing. Not a lot of people are talking about that on stage. But I don't have a choice. And when I do these things, I distract myself with these very silly things. I go to thrift stores and I buy mugs, coffee mugs. And then I have these Sharpies and I make them sad and I call them sad mugs. And everybody loves these things. They always tell me to bring them to shows and sell them because people buy them online and they love these things. I can't bring them to shows because I don't want to sell these things to people because I don't want my conversations afterwards to be anything about money. I want the conversations to be genuine because they really do fuel me.
Recently, you got to open for one of your comedy heroes. Tell us about that and what kind of advice he gave you.
I've never subscribed to having heroes, but if I did, Doug Stanhope would have been one of them. He's been overwhelmingly one of the most honest people I've ever seen in my life, unapologetically so. And so I got a call that I was going to open for him for a weekend. And what was great is I got the call from two different people for two different shows, which means I fit the bill, which made me so happy. Just that alone was great. I got to open for him at a venue, 650 seats. It was sold out. It was the second largest venue I'd ever done. But given that I had a history of loving him, it was fantastic. I went up, and on the way to the show, I actually wrote two new jokes that I had never done. And I went up, and I did them, and that crowd gave me one of the best reactions because I knew that that would be his crowd, would be a crowd that would love me. And so I went up, and I had the most fun I could possibly have, and they laughed so ridiculously hard. I got off stage, and he was right there, and he grabbed me, and we walked outside, and he said I had to come out of the green room. Because they were laughing. I never come out of the green room. I had to come out of the green room because they were laughing so hard. I thought maybe you took your pants off. And it was the best compliment I had ever had. And we had this very long talk about how to make that stuff palatable, and it really helped me. And as far as building a fan base, no one's been more generous than Doug Stanhope to me.
Did he have a piece of advice that kind of summed it up for you?
He said details. He said if... My worry was anytime I talk about my mental health or my physical abuse, I never want someone to think I'm making fun of that. I'm just talking about my experience. I never make fun of anybody. I don't like that. And so he said, you just have to add details so they believe you. And I've done that.
You have three kids. How do they respond to your... Five kids.
Yeah.
You have five kids.
Yeah.
How do they respond to your comedy and style?
Well, my three older boys, they love it. We grew up together, you know.
I should say, because you were 17.
I was 17 when I had my first boy. I have two in college right now. And we grew up together because at that point I was just figuring out how to be an adult. Nobody ever taught me anything. I was learning everything on my own. And so they grew up a lot like I did, where comedy was just very important. It was crucial. It was... I don't know how to explain that, but it was just it's always just been one of the most important things in my life, and I made that very clear to my kids, and I never forced it on them. I would sit and watch it, and it didn't matter what we were watching. I didn't care about the language because I always taught them, you know, they're all words, and you use them when you need to use them, and you don't when you shouldn't, you know, and they love it. I had one of my top five moments in my life was I was doing this 1,200 seat theater in Greensboro, and this is like the most important show I had ever done, and my kids were there, and I brought him up during my set. I just brought him up, and we had a great moment.
This weekend, will you tell us a little bit about the event that you're participating in? It's a benefit for the Lucy Daniels Center.
Yeah, I'm super excited. I don't have a history with them, and this is my first opportunity to work with them. But children's mental health is super important to me, and they asked me to be on, and I've started diving into it. It's actually their 25th anniversary. They've been doing it for 25 years. They're trying to make this an annual event. It's this Saturday at King's. It's called Laugh Loud, Sing Proud. 7:30, $10 at the door. There's going to be an amazing comics. Some of my absolute favorite North Carolina comics are going to be there, and they have a lot of pain and misery to share with people and make funny. And there's also some very legendary Triangle musicians that are going to be there as well. So I'm super excited, but I couldn't be happier to be on the show. I've been doing a lot of benefit shows for the last year and a half, and I'm actually, thanks to the article that came out last week that Josh Schaefer wrote in News and Observer, I've actually gotten a ton more calls to do benefit shows. And so I think through comedy, I'm getting this opportunity to find what I like to do, and I think that's what it is.
That's stand-up comedian Eric Trundy. Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Eric will be performing a benefit show this Saturday at King's in Raleigh at 8 p.m. You can find out more about that show and his other upcoming gigs at our website, stateofthings.org. That's the State of Things for today. The State of Things is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is a technical director. Al Wadarski is filling in for us today. Andrew Tai is our intern. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Phoebe Judge.